But Rabbi Ephraim Meshri understood how much the dollar kosher meant to the Jews in the ghetto. And and that's what I've mentioned so many times as a side comment. It is so important for a leader to exude optimism. Even though perhaps the matzav is bad, and begates al mavet, and cheref chadam nachat al savar, shel adam, the Gemara in Brachot, I believe it is, nevertheless, a leader has to exude confidence. And in the whole debate over the Belzer Rebbe speech, and there are more debates. It's an ongoing issue. I come down on the side of those who do not fault the Belzer Rebbe. They had to be optimistic. They couldn't reveal all that they knew. What can you accomplish if you let the people feel they're dying and have no remaining days where at least there's hope? To take away people's hope is to me not advisable. Is it realistic or not realistic? Realism is not that important when there's no solution. And I come down in favor of the Belzer Rebbe, not because my wife comes from Belzer Chassidim, but that's my feeling as a spiritual leader. Look, I'll be honest with you, those of you involved in Gush Etzion, Alon Shvut, and those of you reading the biography today that came out, many biographies have come out recently, one on Rabbi Lipstein, one on Rabbi Riskin, one on Rabbi Amital, an autobiography by Rabbi Lau. Everyone is involved in this biographical work, which is good. What are you saying?
Would you consider writing an autobiography?
I'm not writing an autobiography because me and Ochi, but I am writing a scholarly memoir, which I think is a Baruch Hashem. I think I've been working on it for 9 and 8 years already. I hope to finish the draft of the final chapter this year, Be'ezrat Hashem. In other words, by the time we break for Shavuot. Anyway, but that's the scholarly memoir, it's different. But the biography of Rabbi Amital is very fascinating. The interaction with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Rabbi Amital's changing from being a messianic Zionist, if I may use that term, to becoming I don't know what term you want to use for a Baron Lichtenstein, but I would say a realistic Zionist. If you've read the chapter, there are many different theories on what changed Rav Amital. Was it Rav Lichtenstein? Was it the Yom Kippur War? Was it the Holocaust that he went through? But one thing I can tell you, one little story, and you can reach your own conclusion because I suffer with it. The Yom Kippur War was a traumatic shock. After the Six-Day War, everyone believed Israel was a giant. And no one can ever forget the Yom Kippur War. I was sitting in Rehov HaBarbanel 24. It was right after Musaf, and the students were gathered around me, and they were shooting questions at me, and suddenly we heard airplanes overhead, which was very strange, Yom Kippur. And then someone burst the door open and was yelling in the Queen's English, "War is broken out! War is broken out!" He was hysterical. And a minute later, a sound truck came by, "Turn on your radios, turn on your radios," and the rest is history. So now the Yom Kippur War came, and as you know, it was a long war, and everyone was away, beginning with Yom Kippur, going through Sukkot, and for many weeks afterwards, even months. And the BMT boys, many of them volunteered. There's a very high percentage of Aliyah from the youngsters who studied with us, the young men who studied with us, during the Yom Kippur War. Those that were here were looking for guidance. So there was one Rebbe in BMT. He today is a Rav Shkunati in Bat Yam, HaRav David Chai Kohen. Maybe you know the name. He's married to Reb Lezer Suva's granddaughter. I believe her first name is Adina, if I'm not mistaken. He's married to Reb Lezer Suva, Reb David Suva's daughter. Reb David Suva's daughter. And he came into BMT. We had a Suder and Yontif, and he told all the fellas, he brought proof after proof that this is Milchemet Gog and Magog, and Mashiach is coming. And the fellas were all excited and inspired. And then a week later, we went back to classes for those that were around, and the boys asked me my opinion. And I told them that I don't want to be so messianic, because if Chas v'Chalila, Rabbi Cohn is wrong,
how will you feel if you're let down? So all I can say is, Ani mekaveh, mitpaleh, yad Hashem, that we should come out of it b'hatzlacha, with a big victory, learn the lessons, but I don't want to have messianic overtones. So as I describe it, this is exactly the atmosphere. At that moment in time, Rav David Chai Kohen was the hero, and Ani Rothkopf was, I don't know what word to use, but let's put it, he was students. They dismissed me with a feeling of trepidation. Chas v'chalila, you're killing our spirits, Mashiach. You know, that whole beautiful feeling. And 6 months later, Ani Rothkopf was the king, and Rav David Chai Kohen had a real problem with the students who reminded him of his messianic predictions. So I don't know. You can draw your own conclusions. We have to be realists, but we cannot be pessimistic. Somehow, the Jewish people will survive. And you find that in the tshuva, and I call your attention to it. Now, I want to do one more tshuva from this period, and then we go into the big leagues, the real big leagues. And here you come. If you recall in my lectures on Hasidut a number of years ago, so I showed you from the Chabatzalat HaSharon, from an Ungarish posek, a Hasidic question, where imagine, I don't know how many of you have been at a Hasidic tish, but you go to a Hasidic tish, the Rebbeim, and many Rebbeim don't use Lechem Mishnah, they use 12 Chalat Friday night. Why do they use 12 Chalat? The Keneged Shiftei Yisrael. Then they give out Shrayim. Could you imagine a Chassid got an entire challah from the table of the Sa Shalom, that's Reb Shalom Rokach, the first Belzer Rebbe. And this Chassid, this challah, this was a skula for panasa, for happiness. Chassid, you have to be a Chassid. I don't believe if I wrote a letter to a student that he's going to frame it and save it. But I can tell you that the letters I have from Reb Moshe Feinstein, from Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, believe me, they are plasticized, guaranteed to last another 10,000 years. Okay, now, hold on 1 second. So the chassid asked the shaila, what does he do for Pesach? Could you imagine Pesach comes, he has this challah, can he sell it with the chametz? Mamish chametz be'en. And Nebuch, the tshuva is, he has to get rid of it. He can't keep it. It's efshe b'kiyumo. His whole sale will not be legitimate. Yeah, I don't have to tell you what this means to a chassid. First of all, they didn't know of such things. But you're talking today where you can take bread and do something to it. It becomes a enerori lachilat keleb and the full enerori lachilat shir. Could be. But the Chabal HaTatron had a different idea. By the way, it's a very interesting question. Are you allowed to leave bread over Pesach? I know that I get rid of all chametz be'en. That's my personal chumrah, because the Rav was makpid. I remember talking with Rebbe about yash, you know, yayin saruf, whiskey. So the Rav felt that was tarobet chametz, that I could sell. All right. I can tell you Rav Yosef Weiss used to go down to the Harlem River and empty out a few bottles of whiskey. I saw it with my own eyes. The fish were very, very happy. I can tell you that. But I'm not a fool, meaning none of us can get away with real chametz being sold over Pesach. You know what I'm talking about? Look at the Israeli food industry. Everything is Jewish-owned. You're talking about multi-billion-dollar conglomerations. Just think how much wheat, how much products, spaghetti, macaroni, is stored for delivery right after Pesach. So even if you're personally machmir, we all wind up being some chamechira chametz, even on chametz be'ed. Now, those that are more machmir, so in the frum areas, you'll see there's stamps on the products baked with flour that was harvested or milled, or the product was produced after Pesach. Okay, but that's for Yechidei Skula. You can't do it outside of Bnei Brak, parts of Yerushalayim. Yes, David?
I one of the samurai visitations a few years ago, and I was over to get one of the, you know, 12 lakh lapari. So I asked him what I was supposed to do with it. I want to be a designer. And so it was carefully wrapped in saran wrap. He told me I should hold on to it, put it in my brake front, and then when it starts to go bad, just stick it in my freezer and take it out in Erev Pesach and eat it on Erev Pesach.
And eat it in Erev Pesach. Did you survive eating a bread that was...
It's actually good. I mean,
how many months old was it?
2 months. I didn't wait till Erev Pesach.
Two months. Baruch Hashem. I'm happy to hear that, David. You have Satan blood in you, and no wonder you treat secular studies as a bidyevet, panasa. We're lost. We're lost. My generation is lost. The Rabbi Reichman, as I just spoke with Matamar of mine in Cleveland, and we both had a, you know, we both understand Rabbi Reichman and where he's coming from and the new generation. Okay, now, here you have an unbelievable question. The Gestapo had to keep the Jews alive in the ghetto because many worked and they didn't want to kill them there. You all know the way the Gestapo worked. So they gave rations to the Judenrat to distribute. Before Pesach, they give them a supply of bread for the next 10 days, 2 weeks in the ghetto. Now, could you imagine? What do you do with that bread? Are you allowed to keep it? You can't sell the chametz. Why can't you sell the chametz? He writes about it. The minute the Gestapo sees a Jew talking to a Gentile, they'll execute him on the spot. Not just that. If the Gentiles know the Jews have all this chametz, they can very well rob it. It's a war going on. They're also hungry. They're also starving. What do you do with that bread? And you're dealing here with pikuach nefesh, because without the bread, what will the Jews have to eat when Pesach is over? Okay, and this is the question. It's Chelek Aleph, the first Chelek of Shelet Otshivet Min HaMamakim, Siman Chaf Bet. And the question is asked, 1943, Pesach is coming, and the Judenrat are called in by the Gestapo, and the Germans give them enough bread to last for 2 weeks. Sell it they can't, because the Milvad Shayehudim Pachatu Ledaber Makum Velavo Itam B'Dvarim Chashashu Gan Kem Shelo Yivadale Goyim Al Alechem, because the minute the Jews, it is known that the Jews have bread, the Gentiles may rob it. So what do they do? All right, now this takes us into the whole question of what's wrong with being mavatel, being mafkir? Why do we have to sell? Why do we have to sell to a guy? Why can't we be mafkir? Don't we say levei batel, le'afra di'ara, we're mavatel it, we're mafkir it, it's no longer ours? So you look into the Shulchan Aruch or Chaim Siman Tav Mem Chet Sif Hey, so you'll see Bitol alone does not help, and Hefker alone does not help. Why? Midioraita it should help, but the Chachamim were Choshesh that if you can get away with Bitol or Hefker, everyone will leave all their chametz all over and just walk away and say, I was mavatalit, I was mafkirit, and chametz will be all over every Jewish house. So that's why bitul or hefker alone does not help, even though midin d'oraita it should. And ultimately, the whole concept of selling chametz develops gradually. I don't want to go into great detail, but it's a very fascinating topic. I refer you to Moedim B'Halacha. Rab Zevin has a very interesting article, call it what you wish, a discourse on how the whole concept of selling chametz began. It begins with the Tosefta, and originally it was limited people who were traveling and had chametz with them, and a guy was traveling. And how ultimately when the Jews go into the business of whiskey in Poland,
it becomes necessary to make this a very widespread practice, because there's no way you can get rid of all your whiskey before Pesach, and it's Hefsid Merupa, and ultimately selling of chametz becomes very widespread. You all know today you have shaylas that no one could ever dream about. I had these shaylot in the rabbinate, Rav Moshe deals with them, that balabatim will sell their chametz and their store is open on Pesach. I had one balabas in Maplewood, South Orange, a man, a Kohen from a traditional background, but like everyone else in America at that in that era. And he had a liquor store. And he comes to me to sell his chametz before Pesach. And I know the liquor store will be open on Pesach. So, by the way, one of his daughters lives in Israel. And I trust she's alive and well. She's a Shomeret Shabbat. And the good comes out of these people. But today, selling chametz is like, you can't go into Pesach without selling your chametz. It's part of the income that a rabbi has, or a rabban will have a better salary and don't take money, so you have a stucker fund for Pesach. Moyes Chitnin, and then the rabbi will tell you, I don't take this money, but if you want to give to the Moyes Chitnin charity fund, bevakasha. Now, this is the question that comes up. What do you do? Now, very interestingly, he brings down a tshuva about a Jew who was in jail, Erev Pesach. And in his house, he had whiskey. You see, this was basically, today we keep more food in our house. In those days, you went out to your backyard, you shechted a chicken, you milked the cow, you made the bread on your own. You understand, it was a much more primitive society. But here, this guy had whiskey in the house, and he has no way of selling it. He's in jail. And they were mata for him to use the whiskey, to sell it, to have enough from it after Pesach, as long as he was mafkir the chametz before Pesach. Here, where you had no choice, you fall back in the din d'oraita. You'll see the sources. He brings down the Mishnah Brura, Hefsid Merupa, Yesh l'smoch al ha-mekilim, that if there was no way to sell the chametz, some want to differentiate that perhaps you can't drink it yourself, but you can sell it to others. In other words, the cold concept of not having hana is essentially drinking it as the greatest hana. Selling it already is a secondary hana. So some are mekil, he can drink it, some are more machmir, but everyone agrees with the yevid, he can sell it. Fine. That is one tshuva he brings down. Now we come to something very interesting, which, again, as why you people, it's going to present an ethical dilemma to us. And I call your attention to it. And this dilemma comes up. I can show it to you in various tshuvot. And it's disturbing to a person like myself who grew up at the feet of the Rav. It'll be interesting to see how you, who go to the Satmatish, how you react to this dilemma. And he quotes, again, you'll see the sources, he quotes an Avni Nezer, this already is in Poland, this is the Sachtchever Rav, Rebbe, this is a Gonshev, a Goinim, Barnstein, the Avni Nezer, of Avram Barnstein. And he quotes the Avni Nezer about a Jew who was involved in illegal sale of whiskey. This was his panasa. I don't have to tell you, the governments heavily tax whiskey. All of you know the problems. People get drunk in Russia. They heavily tax vodka. One of the few countries in the world where liquor is not heavily taxed, at least the liquor produced here, is in the state of Israel. Wow. Excuse me?
Well, the liquor that comes in from out of the state gets taxed.
I'm saying the liquor produced in Israel is not heavily taxed. The imports are a different story. It's considered a luxury import. But here you can buy for 30 shekel good bottles of grade A liquor that will cost you $15, $20 in America. 30 shekel. I was in... liqueur. Chocolate liqueur. Please. Go to Hashikman. You'll check my prices. 35 shekel. Last I saw it was $29.90, but okay, maybe one up to 35. I haven't bought liquor, believe me. I have enough to last me.
You mentioned you don't use the word good.
Why? Why? The chocolate liqueur, now please, and the brandy made here, and the almond brandy, come on, these are, it's on an international level, I'm sorry. The liquor, I'm not talking cheap liquor, but okay, this to me is 35 shekel to say that. All right, anyway, doesn't matter. But all of you know that liquor is highly taxed. The minute liquor is highly taxed, people can cheat on the liquor. It's like everything else. Take the state of Israel, when there were such high taxes on tape recorders, on anything electronic, people were smuggling in wholesale. I once had a student, I don't want to mention his name because he's not this type of person today, but when he was a student, he once came back in the 70s, he showed me in his pockets, he had about 50 Parker pens. I said, what are you going to do with them? He says, I sell them. I said, everyone buys them. I can undersell. There's no tax. Is this allowed? Okay. Gentlemen, what's amazing is the Avnei Nezer doesn't say one word that this man is wrong. He's unethical. It's immoral. Could you imagine if YU today, if a Rosh Yeshiva in YU came out and said, well, there's nothing wrong, it's Menachem Medina, it's Kamsana the Malchata, I can give you all the good lumdas. Could you picture Yeshivat Chovevei Torah? They'd be dancing on the ceiling. This is why you, immoral, unethical. The Avnei Nezer doesn't say a word. But what's the law? What's the law? The law is that if the government catches this individual, all his liquor is muhram. How do you say that in English? Confiscated.
It's like all people when they sometimes back on the airplane, and the customs says, oh, you have to leave liquor here. So supposedly you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to, in front of them, you're supposed to pour it out just so that they don't take it.
Just to be sure they don't drink it. It's like when, you know, when our people went into Russia and they found hot dogs, kosher hot dogs, suddenly you weren't allowed to bring in hot dogs into Russia. And the agents, the KGB agents, had a good time with it. But, all right, that's a similar story, but leave it, because it leads to more stories of what our people went through going into Russia. Anyway, so he asked the Avnei Nezer, is he over, was his mechira good, it was just done in jail, it was just done a chaplap mechira, he did the best he could. And the Avnei Nezer answers him that mimonavshach, you're not oivan chamashav alava pesach. If the sale was done properly, so you certainly weren't over. And even if you didn't sell it properly, but this liquor doesn't really belong to you, because the minute you're caught, it's confiscated. If that's the case, you're not over on Pesach. What's amazing is the Avnei Nezer doesn't say one word of reproach or rebuke, and unfortunately it was well known that Jews were involved in these type of shady operations, and it comes up time and time again in the response literature. In modern times, for your ratification, I can give you two examples that come up in the response literature. One, are you allowed to cheat on an exam? And that was the famous story in Brooklyn College where there was a Chinese professor. It was an evening course. People who go to college at night just to get a degree but really couldn't care less about what they're learning. And they told the professor they have to say the evening prayers. And this is a true story, sadly. Again, I don't want to say I was not there, but I heard the story 1,000 times over, and it shows up in a contemporary collection of response literature, the Mishnah Halachot of Reb Menashe Klein, and what I was told happened was the guy supposedly davening said, Hatshuva, the end for Fadi Yesh Dekasha, and you know, Hatshuva L'Sheila Harishona, and the guy went and gave all the answers. They discussed it. They went back and forth as if they're saying a Hallel chorus together. And then 15 minutes later, they went back and finished the exam. What's amazing is Reb Menashe Katan doesn't say it's illegal, immoral, unethical. He goes into, are you harming anyone else if you get a degree? In other words, if you get a degree, and if you get a degree, and you don't know the material, then you're going to harm other people. Or if you're in a profession where there's a lot of competition, you're going to knock out someone else on the basis of a remark you didn't deserve. That's one. Hold on, one example. Another example, which is right here from Israel, an example that you fellas no longer can understand. David, what year did you come in Aliyah? Do you remember the tokens that you used in the telephone? Okay, the asimonim. If you have an asimon, it's a collector's item today. No, he gets the shaila. You attach a hair and you put it in, or you fake out. I mean, Rebbeinu Shlomo, what minds can think of. We had this in Machon Gold. We had it in, kids were doing it. Rebbeinu Shlomo. So there too, he deals with the whole problem of robbing from a telephone company. But it's amazing how instead of blowing their stack at the immorality of this, they deal with it halachically. Okay, it's not. I have to be honest with you, it's not my cup of tea. If someone asks me a shayla like this, I'd slap his face, send him to the moon, and tell him he's a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, scrupulous, depraved, degenerate, debauched, surreptitious, malevolent bummy. Yes?
Just to give you another example, you don't have to look to Ravanash Akata, with whom over the past number of years in your shir, we've had a lot of...
A lot of dusiyah with him.
Not necessarily related to this topic for now. But I should know that even within our own yeshiva, a Rosh Yeshiva or a Jeremy Weider reads in New York City.
Right, I know the name.
In 2002, he gave a Sichas Musar in October 2002, which was later published in the commentary called Rosh Yeshiva's Response to Cheating. And he says, hold on, let me just get the exact quote.
I hope the tape is picking this up, but Menachem... Menachem says that in YU we had the same problem. He's quoting Rabbi Jeremy.
No, it wasn't in YU. He was talking about...
Oh, it was not in YU.
It was
beyond YU. Okay. It was
Washington High School.
Okay. And what was the question Jeremy dealt with?
He's talking about the problem of cheating.
Cheating, okay.
He says...
See the world of computerization? He's trying to find it on his laptop.
Okay, he says that...
He has it.
It's very hard to do... If you have to cheat, please first take off your yarmulke. Take off your tzitzis, put them in a drawer. If you have tefillin that are exposed, cover them with a double covering, and do your heart desires. And Rechman will slum on that day that some people do get dragged in front of the Academic Standards Committee, and we have from Jews there, and non-from Jews, and non-Jews in that committee. When you've been called in for cheating, please walk in there without your yarmulke. Who's walking without a yarmulke? So no one should ever think that it's the yarmulke, the chas v'shalom, the yarmulke that gave you rishus to cheat.
So the
perm spiel on this is very funny.
Okay, I'll say that. So Jeremy Weider, I see we share the same...
They publish this now in the Academic Standards
right.
Committee. They give it out to all the students.
They give it out. Very nice, very nice. All right, we share the same attitude, because I'll tell you... It's very sad. If you cheat, it's what Nechama Leibovich taught us. You become a cheater. And if you cheat, you're going to cheat on everything in life. Your wife, your family, your employees. It's sad. And a person has to learn how to stand on his own two feet. It's important. But we find it, I mean, in the response literature, it was like a given that Jews living in Poland dealt in a semi-legal fashion with whiskey. Now, it may be to Melameda Leim Schut that because of the Jewish situation, this was the only way they could survive. It's like Russia. You fellas have no idea what communist Russia was like. But to give you a simple example, someone who, wherever you worked in Russia, you kept some of the produce. Someone who worked, let's say, in a vodka factory walked home with some bottles. Someone who worked in a fish factory walked home with cans of salmon. And then they would barter, because you couldn't buy this in stores. Only the big shots got it. And so you would barter, and the whole economy worked on this illegal transactions, which everyone was doing. When everyone does it, it becomes legal. I mean, I don't go to my shirman, didn't malchut the dinner. But if everyone is doing it, the same thing in Israel. How much black money passes around. Today it's better. But everyone said when the taxes are so high, they did surveys, they showed from England, the minute taxes go against 20%, the cheating goes much, much higher. And this is human nature. All right, let me go further. So he comes to the conclusion that the Jews really don't own the chametz. This chametz is really owned by the Nazis. They are just giving it to the Judenrat to distribute. They're the distributors, but they are not the owners. Ubifrat shalechem hazeh shelahem haya v'hem asru b'day ha'elstenrat. That's the Judenrat, the elders. Rak al menat lechalek v'lo sheyehei shel Yehudim. V'yim hayu tovsin misha shalach yado b'lechem zeh. If anyone, try to rob that bread, they'd shoot him. It's their bread. It's not the Jews. They, you have to distribute it in accordance with their instructions. And therefore, he told them, lahalacha, they should be mavatel the chametz before Pesach. Midioraita, betel is enough. And after Pesach, they should be able to eat it. It's pikuach nefesh. They have to eat. They have to have something to eat. This is the bread, and media right there under those conditions, what they're doing is correct. So, this too is a magnificent shuva, how Jews are worried about mechirat and chametz, about bread, gam ki elech begeit salmafet. All right. Ad kan, the topic that I wanted to develop, showing gevura bizman ha-shoah, a topic that has become extremely popular today in the Haredi world, and even Yad Vashem now is publishing and in a whole textbooks how to teach for the Haredi institutions, and the stress is on the Kedusha Pachayim, the Mesirat Nefesh Bizman HaShoah. Yes, Menachem.
This is a response from Moshe Bleich about the letter.
Right.
He said that it's been published in the Mechavim of Rav Shach.
Fine.
So it's
available in Rav Shach. Right, but what I added was the correction from Lakewood simply about the recipient, which to me is interesting, that I always thought it was an Alta Kletzka, but it turns out he did not learn with Rav Aaron in Europe. It was only in America that he attached himself to Rav Aaron. And he today is one of the elder Rashi Yeshiva in the world of Yitzchak Feigelstadt. Okay. Gentlemen, we now come to a major topic. A topic that haunts us. The sources lead us into a world that is unreal at times. And yet it's all life, it all happened, it's all tangible. Generally speaking, we speak about the 6 million, we say the 6 million Kedoshim. When you say the word 6 million, it almost goes hand in hand with the word Kedoshim. Were they really Kedoshim? And at first glance, it would seem they were not. That 6 million Jews went to their death, and they were not Kedoshim. They were victims. But they are not accorded the status of Kedoshim. Why? And the answer stares us in the face. And I'll show you the sources. Whenever we speak of Kedoshim, it means you have a choice. No one here had a choice. What does it mean, Kedoshim? Worship the idol, I'll kill you. You all know the story of Chana and her sons, the famous Chanukah story. Worship the idol or I'll kill you. The minute you refuse to worship the idol and they kill you, you are a kadosh. If you had worshipped the idol, you'd walk away scot-free. You all know with the Gerush Sfarad, there were two great leaders of the Jewish community in Spain. One of them was the Abravanel, and there was another great Jewish leader. The Abravanel left. The other one accepted Christianity.
Yeah,
Rav Avram. I think his last name was Senor, they called him. But I don't want to mention his name. Imagine, a great leader. He accepted Christianity. No. The Abravanel was a kadosh. He sacrificed. He had a choice. The other one failed. There was the story of the chief rabbi of Rome after World War II. He became a Catholic.
Israel Zoli.
whatever. I don't want to mention the names of these mumarim. No, it's frightening. Imagine he became a Catholic. The same thing with the cardinal of Paris, that so much was the Luster J. He had a choice. He didn't have to become a priest. It was after, we're all right. I understand he was raised in a monastery, but then he found out he was Jewish, and he remained within. Later in life, he seemed to be very confused, and YU gets involved, and his funeral, they said Kaddish along with everything else. By the way, the Catholic Church loves when you say Kaddish, because it shows that Jesus was a Jew, and therefore Jews can become good Christians, no problem, and you can have some vestige of the original Judaism in your practice. But he had choice. And he didn't have to become a priest. But he has a big family, both in Israel, both in America, that Shema Shabbat. You all know in America, there's Dr. Arnold Lustiger. I believe it's a second cousin to the cardinal. And Lustiger, and Lester J, it's the same name. And Arnold Lustiger published two wonderful volumes on the Rav's Torah.
The Machzorim,
I'll show you, is very fascinating today what happened. I'm well aware. But the Machzorim, he didn't publish. The Machzorim were published by the OU, and that itself is a story speaking about ethics and morals and all that goes with it. We need not elaborate. Now, are they Kedoshim? Aren't they Kedoshim? We'll begin this topic now, and we'll finish it many, many weeks from now. First of all, what is the source for Kiddush Hashem? We learned this Gemara with the Rav. I'm from the original Sanhedrin class. 2 years we spent in Sanhedrin. The second year we dealt with this topic. Unfortunately, we didn't deal with the Agada. And we did not learn Chelik with the Rav, which really, if we could go back in time, I would lie down on the floor and cry like a baby. Rebbe, learn Chelik with us. Well, what we could have gained had we learned Chelik with the Rav. But that's life. At the time, the Rav was the king and I was a servant. By the time I could speak a word or two to the Rav, Kelef HaMalakeit B'yam, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I believe it's Samach Chet. So the Gemara we're looking at is Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. That's where the sugya begins. And let me go shlav shlav. There are many different points that have to be made. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Bishum Hashem Bayochanan Yichot Sadak Nimnu V'Gomru Be'Aliyat Beit Nizva Belud. In other words, this was a topic of great discussion when the persecution of the Jews began. Kol avirot shebetorah umimlech ladam avov al tarog ya'avov al yehareg chutz me'avodet chachavim gili arayet u'shvichat amim. And those are the three big sins that you're commanded to give your life. If a guy says, kill this person, if a guy says to you, worship an idol, if a guy says to you, rape this woman, or rape this married woman, let me be very medayek in my words, you have to give your life and chas v'chalila not do the sin. Fine. Later on, the Gemara says, Ki yata rab dimi yom rab yochalam shenavala shalo bishat gezeidat hamalchot. Avo bishat gezeidat hamalchot. Afilu mitzvah kala yahareg v'alya avar. That all this was said when it's not a time of a gezeira. It was an individual Gentile. But if it's a time of a gezeira to uproot, to abolish, to totally negate Yiddishkeit, then even a minor mitzvah, you should allow yourself to be killed and not transgress.
Not the Rabman, I'm Rav Yochanan. I feel you bishat gizeya tamalcha lo amru. I feel you shalom bishat gizeya tamalcha lo amru ela bitsina. I vote beparchesia. I feel you mitzvah kala. That it's even more stringent. That when is this said that you can get away with doing every sin under the book outside of the major three? When it's not a time of Gezeirat HaMalchut. Now there's another addendum. I feel when it's not Gezeirat HaMalchut. But it's Parhesia, and the Gemara will define that in a few minutes. If it's in the public thoroughfare, give your life. And don't transgress, even for a mitzvah kala. Wow. Then the Gemara wants to know, my mitzvah kala? What do you mean by a small mitzvah? And in an unimportant mitzvah? A minor league mitzvah? Call it what you wish. Afilu lishinui akata dimasana. That even it would appear from Rashi's pshat to change the color of the shoelace. Could you imagine that if the goyim wore one color and the Jews wore another color, even for that you have to give your life. You look into Tosfot discusses it, and he says it's not that the Jew, that the shoes were different, but he stresses that the shoelaces were different. It's wow, what a statement. Some Rishonim want to learn that the shoes were different, but Tosfot does not accept it. Rashi seems to learn a pshat. It's not so much in color, but the way you tied your shoe. But, well, hold on 1 second, Aaron. But look what a minor detail we're talking about. And nevertheless, Bishman. Turn it back to tape, right? It's recording, yeah, both. Okay, so Tosfa says, look what a minor detail. According to Rashi, Tosfa, shoelace colors, the way you change the shoelace, is the shoe itself a different color? By the way, here you see an inference to a question we asked in the Monday class. Is there a Jewish civilization that implies everything a Jew does has to be done in a certain way, different than the non-Jewish world? And if that's the case, that there's a Jewish civilization, look at the way we're dressed today. Look how we're dressed no differently than the non-Jews in the Western world. Think about it. How can we say today our shoelaces are different? We tie our shoes differently. Our shoes are a different color. We wear the exact shoes that the Gentiles wear. So you see, from this Gemara, you would have to learn pshat that it's talking about in a society where there was a marked difference in the way the Jew dressed. If you want to take it down to today's society, imagine if a Gentile came to you and said, take off your black hat or I will execute you. No? According to this Gemara, if it's b'parchesia, or it's b'shat zman ha-gezeira, it may very well be you have to allow yourself to be executed rather than remove your black hat. Follow me? I mean, the implication. It's a frightening implication. And you should know that terrorists have attacked Jews all over the world. Many times, it is a black hat or Hasidic garb, because they know these people are Jewish. When those two mere yeshiva boys were attacked right outside Shayafro a number of summers ago, and the boy from England was killed,
The American boy was badly injured. The Mechabel from Hebron knew exactly that they were Jewish because they were wearing black hats. So it's a very powerful concept, that shoelaces, shoes. Where does this enter into the picture? But you see, it may be that we're required to have a society, or at times there was a society where every facet of our dress was different. Yes, yes, Aaron.
Do you have a story about this in the Rav book, about the Beis HaLevi, moving out of the community?
I have a story that the Rav told. It was family tradition that the Beit HaLevi wanted to change to more modern clothes, and he felt that if he changed in Europe, it would be over the Minhag HaMakom. So he went to Galicia, and he went to study with the Gedolei Yisrael there. I think it was Reb Shlomo Kluger, according to what the Rav said. And there, since they were wearing modern clothes, and he lived there for a while, he put on modern clothes, and then he came back to Lithuania in modern clothes. You can apply the same story to Reb Yisrael Salanta. He went to Germany, and in Germany they say he trimmed his beard, he wore modern clothes, he tried to learn German, he went into the universities, argued with students, tried to inform them, enlighten them, inspire them, etc. Yes, what did you want to ask? What's your first name?
Jesse.
Jesse, yeah, go ahead, Jesse. I know.
Los Angeles.
It's Los Angeles. He's twice the size of it. They're both.
You all see the table over here.
Jesse, are you a basketball star? With that size, you're going to revolutionize YU. He doesn't use his height. Wow. No, use the height for learning. Maybe it's a good mind. Jesse, go ahead. Not kill himself,
allow himself to be killed.
Privately for the three major sins, yes.
No, not the three major sins.
Shas Gezerah, it would appear privately too. According to what we're reading in the Gemara, absolutely. I'll show you the Rambam. Relax. It's a long way to go, but these are the Yesodot. I just want to put down the Yesodot. Okay, now the Gemara wants to know what Parhesiyah is. What does Parhesiyah mean? The Gemara says 10 Jews. And they learn it out from the Meraglim. That where it talks about the Meraglim, it uses the word Eida and Hibadel mitoch Eida Hara'ah Hazot Malaholin Asara Vakuli Yisrael Avkan Asara Vakulo Yisrael. That we learn out from the Meraglim, this is the source of an Eida, the source of a minion. 10 Jews. Okay. 10 male Jews. That's Parhesiyah. Then the Gemara asks a simple but very famous question. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Let yourself be killed. We have a whole book in the Bible that goes against this rule. For her Esther, Parhesiyah have. Everyone knew that the king was taking Esther Hamalka. And all right, it wasn't a Gezerah. It wasn't Keneged Hadad. But he was taking her in front of Klal Yisrael. Parhesiyah. How could she do one of the three cardinal sins? Adultery. Living with a Gentile. And the Gemara gives the famous answer. Esther Kaka Olam Haita. This is a very important Gemara. It's very important from the point of view of Halacha. It's very important on the level of simply understanding a woman's mystique. And of course, the Gemara is absolutely right. Unlike a male, a woman's sexual drive is infinitely less. What's fascinating, and I say this in passing, if you studied sexology, that later in life a woman's sexual drive can be infinitely stronger than a man. But it's something she has to learn. It's not like a man where the sexual drive is there ab initio. And this is a basic difference that all equality in the world cannot change. It's ontological in the very creation of man and woman. Right, there may be many reasons why.
but it's fascinating. And therefore, Esther Chaker Olam Haita. She can be completely inactive, and the act of sex cannot be rewarding to her, or it cannot be an act of exultment or pleasure. She's simply no more than an object for the king. Esther Kakar Olam Haita. Okay, and this is the Gemara, the Rambam Paskins Lahalacha. Paskins out this Gemara. Every word in the Rambam becomes important. It's Hilchat Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Chamishi, and you look into the Rambam and you'll see he goes into all these klalim that Kiddush Hashem is the three major Averot. You have to give your life rather than be over. Bizman Hashmad, it could be even for a minor mitzvah, you have to give your life. Parhesia, it could be even when it's not as man hashmad, you have to give your life. What is parhesia? Asara b'Yisrael, and all the klalim of the Gemara are put down in the Rambam, black and white. Okay. Now, what's very important about the Rambam is, look what he says. If there's a time when you don't have to give your life, and let me read the words of the Rambam. It's Perek Hei Halacha Aleph. Kol Beit Yisrael Mitzvim Al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol Hazeh Shenema V'Kiddashti B'Toch B'nei Yisrael. And the Jews are told they have to be Mekadosh Hashem. Musharin Shalola Chalel, they cannot be Mechalel Hashem. What does it mean? Bishah She'amod Goy V'yanoset Yisrael Avo Lachat Mikol Mitzvot Amur B'Torah O She'agenu Ya'avor V'lo Yehirag She'ne'ema B'mitzvot Asher Yaseh Otam Chadam V'chai Bahem V'lo sheyamut behem, v'yimeit v'lo ava harei ze mitchayev b'nafsho. Wow. What does the Rambam say? That if you want to be more than what the halacha requires, although we have a klal that a person can be machmir. All of you know that a good deal of Judaism, who he observes Rabbeinu Tam, that's a chumrah. That hasn't yet caught the Eid HaRedit. Their calendar still gives the normal time for Matzah Shabbat Rabbeinu Tam is in small print. But everyone knows that's a chumrah. Galat Kosher for Ashkenazim is certainly a chumrah. And you can take every chumrah in the world, it's wonderful. What about if you want to be machmir and it's one of the minor sins and you say Judaism is so precious to me, I'd rather die than be machalo Shabbos, kill me, and they kill him? The Rambam paskins lahalacha, the yemeist, the loava, hare ze mitchayev b'nafsho. And if you're not satisfied with the Rambam and halacha aleph, you turn to the Rambam in Halacha Dalet, he spells it out once again, Kol mi shenema bo ya'avor v'yanya hareg v'neherag v'lo'ava harei ze mitchayev b'nafsho. V'chol mi shenema bo ya'hareg v'yal ya'avor v'neherag v'lo'ava harei ze kiddush et Hashem. And he goes on and on that these people who makadesh shem shemayim ve'elohim harugim malchut shem ma'alal malatam ve'aleim ne'emar ki alecha harganu kol hayom nechshavnu ketzon tivcha ve'aleim ne'emar isfuli chasidai korsei briti alei zavach. And Chazal, you'll see the sources. These are all Gemaras the Rambam is quoting.
he praises these people to the sky. But one thing you see from the Rambam, if you're not obligated to give your life and you give your life, you are a sinner. You have killed yourself. It is literally a rotzeach. The only difference is you didn't kill someone else. You allowed yourself to be killed. It's ritzicha. You've done a terrible thing. No ifs, buts about it. And this is the Rambam lahalacha. Okay, so we saw the Gemara, we saw the Rambam. One thing is clear, choice is what it's all about. Without choice, you're not a kadosh. Gentlemen, who takes issue with the Rambam? The Chachmei Ashkenaz. What's amazing here is the Chachmei Ashkenaz have a different approach, and this approach reflects itself right down to modern times. And I'll take a major source and show it to you black and white. One of the most famous Rishonim is the Trumat HaDeshen of Reb Yisrael Isserlein. Doctorates have been done on him at Bar Ilan. This was the end of the period of the greatness of Franco-German, underlined German Jewry. The Jews were suffering, the Crusades, they were being butchered, they were being killed. And the Trumat HaDeshen is a major source for our halacha and all that develops later with the Ramah and all that we practice today. A lot goes back to the Chachmei Ashkenaz of this period, Amitai, and the Trumat HaDeshen Roshan. Now, I'm holding in front of me two editions of the Trumat HaDeshen, and I once again say that I was born before my time. This is the classic edition of the Trumat HaDeshen that I grew up on. Look at the way it's printed. Rashi text, everything thrown together. No footnotes, no sources. Baruch Hashem, you live in a world where there's an edited edition of the Trumat HaDeshen put out by Rav Shmuel Avitan. Look into Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Sadi Tet. Look at the print, Otiot Merubaot. Look at the footnotes. It is a pleasure to deal with these edited editions. Now, the Trumat HaDeshen puts down the Ashkenazic tradition, which goes back to Balei Tosfot, and is at variance with the Rambam. Yes, Menachem, I haven't said anything yet.
Can Rav Kefet maybe one week deliver a series of lectures over a month or two over the importance of Machon Yerushalayim?
My attitude towards Machon Yerushalayim comes across in what I just said. You know,
I'm saying,
what you want, I won't be able to teach anything this year. The topic I'm just starting now is going to take months. It's going to take many, many lectures, and I am taking off 2 weeks to taking off two lectures to deal with Martin, why you and as the world moves right. And remember, we're shut down next week.
And Shabbos
be, and I'll announce it. Give me a chance. Next week, orders from America. No classes allowed.
No, Shabbos.
We're talking, he's asking, he's not going to, Rabbi Reuben won't be in Shabbos. He asked me why Sunday, Monday, next week there are no classes. Gentlemen, let me teach Torah. Let me learn Torah. There's the General Assembly, and orders came from New York that the boys.
Rabbi, it's in 2 weeks. It's the 16th, 17th, 18th.
Not next 2 weeks.
It's not next week. Next week I teach.
In 2 weeks.
Oh, very good. You're telling me. I saw my whole note is wrong. I have to revise it. Oh my gosh.
It's the 16th, Yom Rishon, the Yom Sheni,
and Yom Shlishi. So next week we have class.
I won't be here.
Where are you next week?
Yom Bella.
You're living. Good. Anyway, listen to the Tumat Tetesh. There's a very, very famous source. Siman Kuf Tzaditet. And the Sheila, Kol Haverot Shenemru Behem Yavo V'Al Yehirog Kigon Bisha Haverot, except for Avodah Zarah, Gilorat Shlicha Damim, Im Yitratse Echad Leharei Kedei Shelo Yavo Ubalim Loch Heich Morin Lo. Gentlemen, do you start to see the depth of this question? This question is psychologists should analyze this question in addition to halachas.
What was it you just read?
I'm going to hear. The question is as follows. Someone is told he has to be Mechallel Shabbos or they will kill him. He comes to ask the rabbi a question. And he wants a decision from the rabbi. What are we to tell him? How do we paskin for him? Now, what's inherent in this question, and you see it from the tshuva, is that the person wants to be killed rather than be Mechallel Shabbos. He wants to be machmir al atzmo. I introduced it a few minutes ago. He wants to hold Rabbeinu Tam. He wants to eat blood kosher. Someone comes to you and asks, do I have to hold Rabbeinu Tam? The answer is no. What about if you see that this person was raised in Brisk and was greatly influenced by Dr. David Applebaum and Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, and you see Nafsho B'Sheilato, any rabbi with Seichel would say, look, Meika Hadin, you don't have to observe Rabbeinu Tam, but if you feel the need to, God bless you. Someone comes to you and says, do I have to be Makpid on Glat Koshin? Now, this person is of Lithuanian origins. Whoever heard of Latkoshin Lithuania? But he's been influenced by America, by the OU, by Agudat Yisrael, by Kashrut standards. And you say to him, look, Meika Hadin, you don't have to eat only Glat Kosher. But if you want to eat Glat Kosher, Hareza Meshubach. Now, someone comes to you and says, Rebbe, I know Meikra, then I don't have to give my life for Chilul Shabbos. But I want to give my life. I can't be Mechallel Shabbos. Now, what are you asking for him? Tell him, oh, that's wonderful. Be Machmir. Yeah, be Machmir. An hour later, you'll have to bury this individual, throw him in the ground, and cover his body with dust and stones. Do you understand the question? Now, the Rambam would absolutely, totally tell the person, absolutely not. This is not Shabbos, Rabbeinu Tam. No, what's wrong? So you keep longer. I once called David Applebaum after Shabbos, and he answered, yes, didn't say an extra word. Then I realized he keeps Rabbeinu Tam, and he's only answering because he thinks it's a medical emergency. Fine, you keep Rabbeinu Tam. It doesn't harm anyone. I have a good friend, whenever we go out, he insists there has to be a glat kosher place. All right. Doesn't hurt me to eat glat kosher. Yerushalayim, I don't know. I hear stories with the Hsherim. Truth is, that you wind up, you should just eat out of your own microwave. I think you're better off. But even there, you can't be overly wise because you're buying products that all have hashgacha. All right. So you keep glat. A person here is machmir al atzmo? He's dead an hour later. He's gone. He's finished. You throw him into the ground. This was the question. And he answers. He says, it's a machlekes l'shoinim. Says, the Rambam wrote, if God forbid you give your life where you don't have to, hareza mitchayev b'nafsho. You have been an accessory to killing yourself. Murder. And then he quotes the Ashkenazic sources, and you'll see them all here, and they say, Midat chasidet hu leherog velo yavar kachai gafna, that The Ashkenazic sources say it's Midat Hasidah. If you give your life where you're not required to give it, it is Midat Hasidah. All right? Machloket Rishonim. Chachmei Sfad versus Chachmei Ashkenaz. So he says, no, how would you paskin, following the rules of classic psak? So he says, Vahayanira, Vahoel de Pluta de Ravuta, Azlin in Lakula, Beisa, Bisakonet Nafashat. And he says, what are we talking about here? That we're talking about a machloket rishonim. We're talking about an iser of sakonet nefashot. We're talking about being alive or dead, Jesse. Under those conditions, following the klalei hapsak, sakonet nefashot lahakel. What did Reb Chaim do on Yom Kippur? Did Reb Chaim ever paskin that a cholah can't eat? He would go out of his way. God forbid you have to eat. Didn't Reb Yisrael Salanter, according to tradition, get up and make Kiddush on Yom Kippur morning when there was a cholera epidemic in Vilna so that people would see him eating and they would eat sakonet nefashot? Right or wrong? When people had a tiny to Reb Chaim, he said, I'm not mekil in Dine Yom Kippur. I'm machmir on sakonet nefashot. Absolutely, 100%. My dear, right or wrong? That's the way we should paskin. And yet, there were those who said it's a midat chassidut. Give your life. The Trumat Hadeshin was bothered. How can you have that viewpoint? How can the Balei Tosfot have that viewpoint? How can the Ashkenazic scholars have that viewpoint? And that was the viewpoint that he was living with. And he says, Lamdasim. You see, every other halacha in the Torah, every other example you can give, there is no loss of life involved. The mitzvah, Lishon Shabbos, do this, do that. If you don't do it, if you're over, there's no loss of life. By Kiddush Hashem, the very essence of the mitzvah is to give your life. So you see, when it comes to Kiddush Hashem, or a subdivision of Kiddush Hashem, at that moment, you give your life. We see that there's a concept that you have to die rather than transgress. This is only in Kiddush Hashem, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. Once there is such a mitzvah, perhaps if you wish, you can elongate it, not just for the three major sins, but for any sin, even where you're not obligated. But you feel the need to be machmir. You feel the need to go beyond the letter of the law. Your soul longs to be united with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the world of truth, with Olam HaEmet. You don't want to remain in this world. It could be that in this instance, you're allowed to give your life. That's exactly what the Trumat Hadeshin says. Amnam yeshlama hachi del inyan kiddush Hashem shelo hipida Torah al ibud nefashot b'Yisrael v'yamra masurat smachor al kiddush Hashem lo yalfinin la mishas fekei daleit bohu mishum kiddush Hashem. That in this case, where God is not makpid on life. Normally speaking, the most important factor we have is life. And every rabbi in the world who has the paskin, shelav, shmirat, shabbat, or kashrit, or whatever it is, life is more important than anything. Someone come, I remember I had a dear friend, my chavrita, so he had a problem with his blood count, not enough red blood cells. So the doctor prescribed liver pills.
liver pills, capsules. I don't know what they take today, but this is what they took in the early 50s. So he called Reb Moshe Feinstein. It was before Purim, Reb Moshe, right after Purim. Reb Moshe was in a very good mood. And he said, he's like a younger man, you know, you're a young man, you want to grow strong, you want to grow tall. He said, Avada, no question, you can take the liver pills. Today, I mean, we understand learning, it's not the eating, it's a different story altogether, a pill. But Reb Moshe was mata for him, the liver pills. Don't talk about it too loud, because there's a whole industry today in kosher vitamins, and you don't want to quote Reb Moshe, because perhaps when kosher vitamins are available like today, we have to be more inclined to take the kosher. I don't know, I'm not paskening, but sakonet nefashat. Here, the very concept of Kiddush Hashem means giving your life, dying, akedat yitzchak, sacrificing yourself. And if that's the case, the Ashkenazic Rishonim simply said, it's no different than holding Rabbeinu Tam, eating glatt kosher. This individual feels the need to give his life. He's not a sinner. We don't agree with the Rambam. And the Truma Tadeshin says, V'nireh, t'lefich hanyan, v'sheroin anu kavanato, morim lo. And gentlemen, you just heard some of the most important thoughts you will ever hear in being posek halacha. That I'm going to summarize it. That when a posek has the paskin, you have to evaluate the person standing in front of you. Who is he? What is his psychological makeup? What are his intentions? This is not a black and white issue. So machlokes we shine in between gedolei Yisrael. It's pikuach nefesh. He's ready to die. What are you paskin for? And the Truma Tadeshin says you have to make a value judgment. Who he is. And this is what, I don't know if I said it here or if I set it up in the hotel. This is why Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was very opposed to paskin in Shailat over the telephone.
He said it here a few weeks ago.
Okay. You understand. The same thought. You have to see the person, know the person, what's his background, where he's coming from, what he's asking, who he is. And could you imagine? That's what the Truman Hadeshin is posing. But one thing you see, whenever we talk about a Kadosh, there's choice. Where there's no choice, the Nazis killed Catholics. The mother was Jewish. The father was Jewish.
If you kill a person just because he's Jewish, not because you want to kill him, the only reason you kill him is because he's a Jew. Why isn't that a kadosh?
Why should that be a kadosh?
Because he's dying because he's a Jew.
What, since when does that make him a kadosh?
That's what makes him a kadosh.
The Gemara in Sanhedrin doesn't say that.
There's other sources. The Gemara is not the only
one. Show me a source.
I'll show you that.
Show me a source. Say that. We'll get there. But it's not what you... That's my very question. Where did he get it from? But before we go into where we can perhaps... I asked the Rav this very question. No, they took responsibility for this. We're going to deal with that. So we dealt with that last year. I'm going to give more sources this year. That's saving other lives. So, all right, save lives. Look. I'm going to reach the conclusion they're Kadoshim. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not anti-Holocaust, God forbid. But we have to think halachically. What I asked the Rav this question. And the Rav gave me the answer, which is the only answer possible. After all is said and done, I'll show you how much research I did and how everyone talks like Yitzch Rubin. Yeah, he's a Kadosh. He died in Holocaust. When you asked him for a source, oh yeah, it's the Rambam. What Rambam? When Rambam? Where Rambam? Suddenly no one knows. Now, I'll show you the source of the mistake, but I'll show you how we... But give me a chance. The material here is overwhelming. It's. You'll see halacha l'maisa, what I'm going to do next week. It's going to bring it right into the Israeli army, into the IDF. Okay.
Oh, the 62. The
volume you just gave me summarizes it. Rabbi Lichtenstein.
Right.
I mean, he's some Rabbi Seidam. I incorporated two things, but you know what's missing in the volume?
Yes.
What?
Well, you mean in the book?
In the book you just gave me, and I gave back to you. Yeah. What's missing?
No, you're thinking I'm saying Michael Wishergrad.
Sadi Gimel Banot. And that's what I was anxious to see how he dealt with it, and he does not deal with the Holocaust. Okay. Okay, gentlemen, I just.
What did Wishergrad
write? That's Brother Daniel.
Brother Daniel, that's a different story. Seidam, we'll get there. Gentlemen, I want to go just one step further. But look what we've done tonight. We've put down the basic sources, and there are no other sources. This is it. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Rambam. You can look into the Rambam. You'll enjoy seeing how he codifies and how twice the Rambam stresses that if you give your life where you're not obligated to, you are an accessory to murder. Worse than a chassid shota. You're a rotzeach. Chassid shota is a fool who let a woman drown because she was naked. Okay. The Trumat Hadeshin is powerful. And the way he paskins at the end, how he warns you, weigh the person asking the question. I mean, that's overwhelming insight. In other words, you have to know who's asking, what mental state he's in. It has frightening implications when you think of the Holocaust. If you want to take it a little further, we're going to show you a question Rabbi Levine received, which is exactly this question that the Trumat Hadeshin is dealing with, except in modern context. We'll get to that next week. Now, so far so good. Tell me, you want to take your own life. You want to be killed. You want to be a martyr. You want to be a kadosh in popular language. It's your life. Do what you want. You want to read Glatt Kosher. You're teaching in a yeshiva that doesn't believe in multi-hashkafa. In Gris, I don't think anyone is going to beat you up if you don't eat only Glatt Kosher. But you're teaching yeshiva where they tell you everyone has to eat Glatt Kosher. No, here they're telling you something else, that the Hashkerim are not reliable. The Glatt Kosher is also not reliable. You should know that if you're going to worry already on that level, it's just mind-boggling what's developed here with religion, with politics. It's sad, but that's the reality. The Rav, you're quoting me. I just said that last week that you said the Rav was so right. The politics. Exactly. Believe me, the Rav was 1,000,000% right. I didn't understand it then, but I sure do now. But you want to force everyone to keep Glatt Kosher, no big deal. Listen to me carefully. I'm coming here for Shabbos. We have a Shabbos together.
The theme is Achdus.
Fine, whatever the theme is on Zayin Gezayin. Menachem, you're a riot. Relax.
We changed the theme over
Shabbos. Achdus, beautiful. Cooperation, very nice. GA, very nice topics.
No.
Yeshiva. Yeshiva, Achdus. We only have 31 students. Why shouldn't there be Achdus? But listen to me carefully. I'm going to have a problem parking my car. Because last year I parked the car, and I want to get out after Shabbos.
They gave us a key.
The gates are not open.
No, we have keys now.
The gate. Well, I'm glad because the gates not open. We hold Rabbeinu Tam. You hold Rabbeinu Tam. Why do I have to suffer? You understand what I'm saying? All right, you hold Rabbeinu Tam. Everyone in the yeshiva has to hold Rabbeinu Tam, or we're going to look askance at you. No, it's not the end of the world. So they'll force you to hold Rabbeinu Tam. My dear students, the Inquisition has captured us. They're going to tell us either worship idols or we will kill you. No? I now decide to kill all my students so they shouldn't become idol worshippers. And the last one left, kill yourself, fall on top of the sword. Do you start to understand this question? You're going way beyond the individual. Amitai's the boss over his soul. All right. He became a frum, and he wants me to hold Rabbeinu Tam, he wants me to eat glatt, it's not the end of the world. But now, interpreted, he became frum, and he's worried that I'll worship idols if the Crusades grab me. So before I can worship idols, he kills me. Chops off my head. Do you, Yitzchak, do you start to understand the depth of this question? Do you know the source? This is the most famous, in my opinion, this is the most famous Derek Habayit in all Dalet Chelkei Haturim. Now, who knows what I'm talking about, Derek Habayit? What am I talking about, Aaron? Call Akavod, I'm glad to see that a young man from North Beverly Hills, Beverly Wood, all right, from Zangers and Beverly Wood. They're not exactly wallowing in the mud there. When Obama gets through with you, you'll be a dead chicken from that area. That's a different story. The first area that's going to go, watch and see. Schwarzenegger won't be able to do a thing to protect you. Gentlemen, Reb Yosef Karo wrote many svarim. You all know that he wrote the Beis Yosef on the Torah. In the Beis Yosef, he's considered a Rishon. I lectured on this about 20 years ago. In the Shulchan Aruch, he's considered the first of the Achronim. Writing the Beis Yosef led to the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I'll let you in on a secret. Anyone who's written a book here, once your book is published, there will always be addendums you will want to make. Because you grow smarter as you grow older, you learn more sources. All right. I was privileged, at least with Revel and Silver, the books came out in 3 editions, so more or less there's nothing left outside of a few typos. There's nothing I really want to correct. I did make additions to Revel from the first edition. There are 2 important paragraphs that exist in the second and third edition that didn't exist in the first. I learned more information. My work on the Rev, if you look at my copy, I have it marked up. I would also make a number of additions. I would change one sentence. That's, you got to be privileged to be able to put out a volume again with the changes. Rakafarara and I want to expand, but that's a different story. The Berak HaBayit is the block letters that appear or if published in the later editions and slightly less dark letters. Those are additions that Rabbi Yosef Karo made to the Beit Yosef. And that is called the Berek Habayit. Livdok et Habayit. Eiz Habayit, the Beis Yosef. Gentlemen, I'll end off. I'll show you the Berek Habayit next week, but I'll just tell you what the theme is. And these words live on in all of response literature on this topic. The Rav HaShochet and the Rav HaMoneah. And we get involved in here in a topic that I believe to call it correctly, we would have to call it preventive suicide. What does that mean? Preventive killings. We don't want the children to worship idols. The Crusades are about to conquer the city. So there was a Rav HaShochet who lined up every kid and slaughtered him Al Kiddush Hashem. Screaming at him was another rabbi who said, are you crazy? Are you an idiot? What are you doing? Why are you killing these kids? Who knows if they will conquer the city? Maybe they'll be pulled away. Maybe they'll be Rachamei Shemayim. Let the kids live. And even if they're taken into a church, who knows? Maybe they'll find their way out. Maybe their children will come back to Yiddishkeit. That's the Rav HaMoneah. And this was the tremendous argument. The Rav HaShochet and the Rav HaMoneah. And this is the echo of all that we've developed so far. Fine, according to the Chachmei Ashkenaz, if you want to die on Kiddush Hashem, Well, we're not required to. What about killing all your students, all your children? You don't want them to worship idols. Look at this question. Look at the implications. Look how this will follow through all the way in the Holocaust. We are opening a Pandora's box of halachic inquiry. So I repeat, we're in the big leagues now. These are not minor league questions. Chametz, Shava, Lava, Pesach is a minor league question compared to this. Dalit Kaisers, they're in Dinim Derabbanan, all right, it's important psychologically. Here, you're dealing with the worst possible event in life. Murder, killing, dying. Remember what Aaron Rakefet has said throughout the years to his students. When I have a Talmud who's studying medicine, I tell him, you better study hard. The worst mistake a Rebbe can make is you give a kid wrong advice. He stares and looks at you, laughs at you and mocks you. But at least he's alive. If you make a mistake in medicine, God forbid, you bury the patient. Can't play games. This is death. What a question. To reiterate, we finished out Chametz Shavuot Lava Pesach. We started what is Kiddush Hashem. It's an amazing story, because that Gemara in Sanhedrin, that is the source, basically. Perikei and Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah, where we begin studying, which also is a sad commentary on what Jewish life is all about, how right the Rav was with Akedah Yitzchak. If you know what I'm saying, that there's Minhag Yisrael, we don't learn the first four prakim of Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah because you have to be the Rav to understand it. You know what I'm talking about or not? Have you looked at it? Look in, you'll see what I'm talking about. You have to be a master of Mor Nevuchim backwards and forwards. But we always begin with the fifth parak. What is the fifth parak about? Kiddush Hashem. And the Rav spoke about Akedat Yitzchak. David Hutton didn't like this. He takes issue with the Rav in one of his books. I should say such things. But the Rav said Akedat Yitzchak is the most basic parsha in the Torah, because unfortunately it's a foreshadow of Jewish history, of all that's going to happen to us. And we who are sitting here, Akedat Yitzchak, is more real to us than any other generation. 6 million Jews, 5 million additional lives destroyed. How many David Applebaums we've lost in the state of Israel? Ribbono shel Olam. Akedat Yitzchak, unfortunately, is an overture. And here you see this source of Hilchot Yisodei Torah that we begin the Mishnah Torah with. The Machloket Rishonim, the Trumat Hadeshim. Look what you're looking at. And he says, if you feel this man is ready, tell him to give his life. And then you go further, one step further, not just my life, all your lives. I don't want any of my students to worship idols. This is the Rav Hashochet, the Rav Hamoneo. Wait till you see the doors of learning. This opens. Now, let me just say the following. Tomorrow's shir is $99,000 to get into, because I was not pleased with you guys ripping apart the Avodraham. And you didn't understand what I meant. It's my fault. I quoted a Rambam. I thought, the Rambam that the feminists go crazy about. And you don't know what I was referring to. Oh, tomorrow Shir is on that Rambam. Then I come back to the Avodraham. Then I bring you contemporary sources to show you how right the Avodraham was. Then, if time permits, I show you the difference between our approach and the approach of Tama Ross, Professor Ross. And Yitzchak, we better not wear clothes when we get to her approach, because we'll be obligated to rip Kriya. Shabbos bears Rav Hashem.
You haven't said a topic yet.
What do you have to set a topic?
No. You haven't told the listeners what the topic is.
The topic on Shabbos, right after the Tfilat, Shachrit, the Musaf, and the Drop of Kiddush, BMT, 40 years later, the institution
Take it out and just give me strength.
The institution that changed the Anglo-Torah world. Now,
they don't want you to speak about it.
Excuse me?
Oh, you don't want you to speak about it.
No, no, I try. What do you have to reveal? Secrets? I'll tell you. Let me give out what I have here. This is Reb Meir Lichtenstein talking about the Rav and religious Zionism. There's one line in there which is epic. Now, this is a biography on the Rav that appeared in the Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
And they asked me to look at it. I have to tell you, it's not a biography. It's more a reaction. You can agree or disagree, but everything in here is legitimate. You know, that's people's take on the Rav. But where I'm quoted very poorly, and I'm trying to correct it.
I know an editor of Wikipedia.
Yeah, if anyone wants it, it's welcome.
A friend of mine is an administrator.
I'll tell you what I want to correct. If anyone wants the Badats, I have another luach. It's unbelievable. If they do what they're doing, they say they're doing, they are the most sophisticated technological people in the world. Every Badatz Mashkiach must have a PhD in food technology and computerization, and it's mind-boggling, and their pictures. I don't say anything.
I have it on my wall already.
Okay, enjoy. Yeshivat Chovevei Torah, this is the famous Yateid Neman article of a year and a half ago. Is it Orthodox? This is Rabbi Levitz's institute. It functions out of Neve Yerushalayim. It's a very interesting.
Does that have the response?
I think it has everything. Well, one second. This is Chabad, where the Rebbe is asked by an Israeli army general why he doesn't move to Israel. And this is Shkia and Seitan Shabbat for Israel, another copy. And here is the most interesting thing of all. You raise the Machzerim, take a look what they did. Does anyone notice?
They took off the Kasira
at this.
They gave you back the money?
I guess I don't have to give you back the money, but they took off the Kasira edition. And I stand in awe. Oh, so this edited by Dr. Arnold Lustiger. I see they give him credit for this too. All right. I love Dr. Lustiger. And Zom Zayn Gesund. I have the Kasir edition in my library.
I found these last night.
Right.
In a Druze village north of Haifa. I went last night
because
there was a warehouse that was farmed that was being destroyed today. So I picked this up. So this is they wish Rabbi Chalak Mazel Tov there.
Right.
Here is Salvechik is there. And then also, Beis Yitzchak from 1960 was there as well. And Rabbi Saul Berman was the Soviet president then.
Correct.
And then also,
Where did they get the rub? One second. Where did they get the rub? One second. So
the rub published this in Apartheid?
This is from Marv. The rub didn't publish in Apartheid. They copied this over from Marav. Pardes was a fellow, Elberg.
Exactly, it's your site, this Tuesday night, Simcha Elberg.
Rabbi Elberg was a fellow traveler of Chabad. He was a Siddish. I knew him. I have his safe inscribed to me on Vasha Shom Ma'ala. I quoted it last year in relation to Rabbi Menachem Zemba. So this is very nice. Here's Rabbi Saul Zsolti.
And that's Rabbi Chalap.
See Bito Akala Liba Rachel, Avram Fishu Becha. Where do they live? I think they live in Israel, if I'm not mistaken. Good. So you did it. What else do you have there?
I got this. Well, I mean, I went with three guys. We took hundreds of swarm out with us.
How come? Menachem is okay. He's in Israel a few weeks. He already owns the country. David, who should I vote for in Yerushalayim? What am I going to do for the elections?
You read what Haaretz endorsed.
Who did they endorse?
Horosh.
Really? Haaretz? Yeah. Who did the Gerebi endorse?
The what?
No, the Gerebi is not going to endorse Horosh.
Not Barkat?
No, because Barkat's the right wing.
I'm going to vote Barkat.
They call it a political neophyte.
You know, I'm going to vote Barkat.
Yeah.
Because my neighbor is going to be elected to city council, Edna Friedman. She's one of the three of the Maftawas. So I
I saw the girl, and I saw she's not married. If anyone knows this shit, she's not a bad-looking woman.
Yeah.
It's a little overweight, but she's not bad-looking.
Still on the record.
It's all right. It's all right. If anyone knows this shit, she's sweet, and she's good, and she has a good mind. She speaks English perfectly. Yeah. Anyway, I asked her what about for Shabbos at Kiddush. She told me to vote for Bakat.
No, give it up.
All right. She told me Bakat. I vote Bakat. My wife wants to vote Guy to Mac. I told her, that's a vote to give, but it's not going to go anywhere.
No, really.
But you heard the good news today? Benny Begin.
Yes.
Miri Eisen.
Miri Eisen, right.
So I'm
Regev.
No, Miri Eisen.
Oh, Miri Eisen? I thought Miri Regev.
No, Miri Eisen, who had been Dover. She's an American. So she's coming out of the woods. So, and they say every Yekam they go to Mafkot. And I think Maftal and all the right wing parties are combining them. So I would have been encouraged. Gentlemen, I want you to know that I delayed my trip to America. The truth is, I had no choice. I had to delay because I have an operation. Erev Hanukkah, the cataract is being operated on. So I have to be around at least 5 or 6 weeks afterwards for the doctor to, look at me.
Did your brother help you out?
Well, this fellow who's operating is the only person in the world who's both my Talmud and my brother's Talmud. It's Avi Yorbach. When he studied in Mechas, he used to come to BMT for my second year. It was before the Kola. Yeah. My second year Shir, which was response literature. Not on the level it is today, but it still was on a good level. And he studied with my brother when he had to qualify here. So we have confidence in him. My brother's name used to be Blumenfeld. Mm-hmm. Blumenthal. Nami's husband, Zichrono Livracha.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother was operated by him. So I could leave the country a week before the elections. I said, no, I got to vote.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting.
You had your envelope filled with cash.
No. I have to rearrange everything. So I spoke with Benny Blau in Cleveland. I have to let me know if that date is good. Florida already said yes. And I'm waiting to hear from Steve Pruzanski. Yeah. I sent out the... And then I'm trying to push the BMT topic, because Benny Blau's all excited, because for him it fits right in with Fuchs High School and whatnot.
Sure. You mentioned Tzadik Gimel. I'm sure you're familiar with J.J. Schatzer's article.
Believe me, I'm familiar with it. But that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Pure scholarship.
Yeah.
I was hoping they
do.
He doesn't discuss it. Lichtenstein, you gave me a volume that's pure scholarship.
What's the thing?
I don't know who he is. It's nothing.
Oh, you're going to Shraga Lichtenstein. Cheskel Shraga Lichtenstein. Yeah, he does.
Who is
he? You know who else he doesn't cite? He doesn't cite your Talmud Melech, who wrote an article about suicide. Now you turn it off. Who wrote about suicide.